listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Today, the Vegas lead is the NASCAR decision to ban, strong word, ban, the Confederate flag. Now, a lot of people have a lot more knowledge of NASCAR, of Southern culture, than I do. So what I'm going to stick to is what I know. And I think the lead here about this story, the key point is how significant it is. On one hand, it's easy to say, wait a minute, Confederate flag, isn't that associated with the Civil War? Isn't that? And no doubt that if you look at the history of the Confederate flag and such, that if you wanted to connect the dots in a certain way, it could be one of, wow, that is a flag of divisiveness, of hate. I think that angle could be presented. I also think that when I think of the Dukes of Hazzard, remember, just the good old boys. I don't think the Dukes were for hate. I mean, that's, you know, I was watching that show on Friday night when I was a kid. It was the Dukes, and I think Dallas was next. The Incredible Hulk was on at 8. I remember that. You didn't want him to be angry, Fez.
No.
All right, so on one hand, if imagery, if a symbol is being perceived one way by one group, one way by another group, one way by, you know, a lot of different ways to do it. I'm sure there's some, you know, racist type organizations or groups or gatherings that rally around that flag. And I also know the Dukes probably weren't all that for hate. What I know for sure, though, is that a lot of the fans of NASCAR felt an affinity to that flag. Some of it might have been not so good, the affinity. Some might have been just all innocent. But either way, NASCAR financially is saying, we think in 2020, this flag doesn't have a place here. It'd be one thing for them to say, we're not going to use it in our marketing. That Confederate flag won't be flown by the tracks themselves. There's all kind of different things they could have done short of saying, and oh, by the way, if you're a fan of ours and you want to come onto the grounds where the event is, you will not have that flag flying, or you won't, you know, won't stay. We're banning it. You
will be strong stance.
It's tangible. It's actionable. There's something to it. Now, it's easy to say it's long overdue. It's easy. But what we know is a week ago, flag could fly high, no problem. Today, it can't. What does that mean? It means that the Black Lives Matter movement, it means the efforts being made are having an impact. There is a consequence, an impact, a result of it that we can look very tangibly here. So why would NASCAR do that? Do they feel like that, you know, I've been listening to those guys on TV and they make some sense, you know, maybe we should take that flag down. No. What happened was they feel like that the business side of this, that to whatever degree it be positive or to whatever degree they're losing something by making this stand, because they are. There's going to be a certain percentage of NASCAR fans that are going to feel less about NASCAR, that are going to feel distance from NASCAR. Now, I would make a major bet. We'll not participate. We'll not watch. We'll cease being fans of NASCAR over this. No doubt. Now, is it 5% of the fans? 3%? 10%? I'm guessing it's well over 3%. And I'm guessing it's probably not over 15. But I would guess, and this is from the outside, that upwards of 15% are going to have less interest in NASCAR, and maybe upwards of 10% will just not involve themselves. Will say, I am on strike against NASCAR, or I'm done with NASCAR. Just like the NFL. And let's use the NFL as the counterpoint here. I'm RJ Bell, straight out of Vegas. The idea that the NFL, why were they not supportive of, if anything, you could say hostile to the Kaepernick original protest? I think it's simple. They believed that a portion of their audience, of the people who effectively generate revenue for, or the people who revenue is generated through, by watching television, by buying merchandise, by buying tickets, buying the red zone, all of it, that would say, wait a minute, I don't like this protest. It offends me. And thus, I'd like the NFL less. That was no doubt. That was the driving reasoning of the NFL saying, hey, let's not go overboard here. Again, we can talk about right and wrong. We're going to talk about dollar signs right now because it's what drives these companies. We know that much. Dollar signs drive businesses, and maybe that's the way it should be because I think it gets messy otherwise. And if you are an activist for this or anything, then vote with your pocketbook because I promise you they take that seriously. I don't know how much the ethics of all this, the morality of it, the justice of it. I think on a personal level, most people have senses of ethics, morality, justice. But in the role of a CEO, of a businessman, it's kind of hard for that to be the focus. And if it is, it usually means that the business suffers. And again, that's an interesting idea. Whoever is the other holders of ownership in a business, it might be stockholders, it might be limited partners. The idea that you're going to lose money over a cause you may or may not feel strongly about. Now, if it's a business owned by one person and that person feels strongly about it and they want to do something that might not be best for the bottom line, if they're the ones that are going to suffer, then that's like making a donation to a charity. You have less money at the end of that, but you've done something you think will help. But I don't want someone donating my money to charity for me. I want to decide where I want to spend my money, either charities or whatever. And thus, whenever you have a bunch of employees, now it's like, huh, this business maybe has gotten weaker over this decision, whatever the decision is. And maybe the CEO is fine with that. Maybe even all the owners are fine with that. If there's one or more than one. But what about the employees? Don't they have a stake? Now, you might say they agree too. Okay, fine. But most of the time, in any business of any size, you're going to have a spectrum of political beliefs. And by the way, if we're talking about things that are obvious, that there's no other side to them, then they're decided already. Anything we still are in dispute, there's another side to it, or why is it a dispute? Why hasn't it changed? And I think NASCAR is making a bold and honorable move here. They are saying, and I'm not sure which of these two they're thinking. It's one of the two. Is financially, we're going to be better off doing this, even though we believe, we know, a percentage of our fans are going to be offended by this. We think that effect is smaller than the positive that will come from it. New fans, maybe more partnerships with other businesses. I don't know. It could be net-net they think it's a financially good decision. Or they think, you know, we're going to lose on this. But you know something? That's fine because it's the right thing to do. If that were the case, then why didn't they change it last week?
Yeah.
Or the week before? To me, if this was an ethical consideration, if this was about justice, then why now? If it's about, you know, finally what we've wanted to do is not a big loss for us. Maybe it's still a loss, but it's a little loss. There was some element of a tipping point where because of the attention that the protest, the unrest has gotten, that they felt like the equation now makes sense. We're going to do this. And I think that you have to give them credit. You have to give them credit for being bold, for not just the words. Bubba Wallace, the one black driver in NASCAR, on CNN on Monday, called for this ban. We're here on, you know, Thursday, and it's happened. They didn't do a lot of focus groups. They did something. So to me, I want to give NASCAR credit for that. And the main credit is coming from the fact that they have a lot of their fans that won't like this. That means there's a cost to it. Straight out of Vegas 101, we ask ourselves, what does it cost the person to say or do what they're doing or saying? If it costs them nothing, then it's probably worth nothing. But if it costs them something, let's say this. If I could say, Fez, I'm going to give you a pizza, and someone else was going to give it to me, I can't get it, so it's yours. Well, you got a pizza.
I'll take it.
You'll take it, but did it cost me anything?
No.
Now, let's say I've got a pizza, and I'm thinking of giving you half. The question is, am I still going to be full from the half? Yeah, probably, unless I'm really hungry. But it still cost me something because I could eat my lunch the next day. So now that's even more expensive. The first one, I couldn't have gotten it anyway. So it cost me nothing. You had it, great. The second one is, it doesn't cost me all that much, but it does mean I have to buy lunch tomorrow instead of eat this pizza. And then there's we got one piece of pizza. I'm hungry. You're hungry. If I give it to you, I'm hungry. That's not going to happen, by the way.
Yeah.
That's the extra cost. So let's think of it in simple terms. We all know when we're hungry what it means. So here's my question. What did it cost NASCAR? I think it's a tangible, real amount. And now let's look at the other side quickly. I'm RJ Bell, straight out of Vegas. Fez, you are, in my opinion, the smartest, gullible person I've ever met. Where you're a brilliant fellow, but man, are you gullible.
I am.
And I think in a way, the hustles you try to do to the world around you, you're actually susceptible to them. So it makes you think that your hustles are going to work too. But you were like, in the pre-show meeting, you were like, I tell you something, is if you look at the NFL is really doing a lot here too. It seems like there's been a major change with the NFL. Now, that wasn't quite your tone of voice, but does that sound like the general gist?
Actually, I think that was my tone of voice, yes. Okay.
And now, let me ask you, finally here, what has the NFL, what piece of pizza have they given away so far?
They haven't given away any pizza.
But you thought they did. What fooled you?
Well, Roger Goodell fooled me by his backtracking and saying he's on the side of social change.
That's great. So what's happened because of that?
Haven't heard any owners come out with any pizza offers.
Well, hold on. What has happened?
There has been no policy
change. Why don't you say nothing? Because no policy change. I'm saying what has happened.
In the NFL?
Yeah.
One statue of a former owner of Carolina's former owner got taken down.
Okay. Anything else?
No.
And was the NFL deciding that, or did the Carolina Panthers?
It was the Panthers.
All right. So I'm not saying every owner's never going to do anything. I'm saying as an organization, what has the NFL done?
Nothing.
NASCAR's done something. So we can all decide if you think personally that something should be done or not, but we're going to call balls and strikes, and we're going to tell you NFL has done nothing except blah, blah, blah. NASCAR has done something, and NASCAR's done something directly offending a portion of their fans. That's the highest stakes there are.
Straight out of Vegas!
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Out of Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's compare the NFL to the NBA. How would you compare the NBA to the NFL?
Well, the NFL had... their games aren't until September, so it's a lot easier for them to say, hey, we're moving forward.
Well, hold on a second. Is it only games? So the draft is irrelevant? You didn't hear a thousand people on radio shows?
That's a great point.
Talk about how it's irresponsible to have the draft.
That's a great point. And it was controversial, and a lot of people said it was too early, and they hit a home run. The NFL did with the draft at the end of April. And by all regards, people were extremely appreciative, you know, the fact that we had nothing to watch at all, not even UFC. And here was that draft for three nights.
Exactly. So you're finally catching up. So in general, how would you compare the NBA to the NFL? NBA was more hand-wringing. More, well, you know.
You're right.
I know. It's not even a debate. I'm RJ Bo, straight out of Vegas. And here's the point. Let's give the NBA credit. They were able to take a position. If this thing would have went south, pandemic would have gotten worse. If there wasn't going to be a season, the NBA would have been taking their rounds, bowing out. They're the progressive league. They're the ones that got they get the interest of the players. That's important. They get the interest of the fans. We are you. You know, some crappy saying like that probably they would have came out with. But then when things went the other way, they laid back because they knew they couldn't get the lane of we're going to be the aggressive ones. So they drafted off the NFL, and then here they are, reluctantly re-engaging with the season. It's all you can. There's no way to say it otherwise. There's no passion. Do you feel any sense of excitement? Hey, finally, we're going to get a chance. No, we're hearing about, we're going to whisper, there's some Lakers that might not, I hear that might not want to even play this thing. And, well, imagine how Portland feels. They don't really have much of a chance. Hasn't that been more dominant than any sense of excitement about the season?
Oh, I disagree. I agree.
Really?
I agree that there's been those whispers and there's some talk about some players not wanting to play and the like. But I think because of the void that we've been
left
with.
I'm not talking about the fans. I'm talking about the participants.
Okay, then I agree with you. The participants, there's certainly that issue. I'm speaking from a fan perspective. Yeah. I think the excitement is overwhelming
return. We can if anything, the disconnect between what the fans are feeling and what the participants are feeling is the story.
Hmm.
The fact that the fans are feeling excitement means, hey, there's reason for there to be excitement. And the players are saying, huh, really? I don't feel it.
Yeah, you're right about that, Carmelo Anthony. Like, why should I come back and play, right?
So to close on at least this part of the NBA, the best business people will take a position that they can benefit from if it goes their way, but they minimize the downside if it doesn't go their way. NBA are adroit operators. They are very good at what they do. Because if this thing would have went south, they would have been out front saying, look at us. We had you. You were important to us. But then on the other side, when it didn't go their way, but you might say, well, they wanted games. Yeah, okay. But they saw it as either politically or for whatever reason, they were going to be the cautious group. Remember, Mark Cuban's the one that said originally, hey, we could be playing by June 1st. And then you didn't see Mark Cuban for like 24 hours. He came out, he had some bruises on his face. No, not bruises. But then he was like, we do not know. We will follow science. Science is the Lord and the guide. It's like, okay, seemed different.
Yes.
The NBA didn't want to be out front with the, hey, we're ready to go no matter what. The NFL was. Now the NFL gets to benefit from that. But the NBA gets to keep pontificating, leaning back, saying, maybe we shouldn't go. Like the whole bubble concept. I mean, is it me or are there multiple places that are already talking about having fans in week one? I mean, in general, the places that or the leagues, the colleges, in the last couple of weeks, how would you say the evolution's been with expectations regarding are we going to have fans or not?
It varies state by state. Some states like Texas, extremely
I'm saying net together.
Huge
over the
positive, more fans.
More, and still, the idea is sometime in October, the NBA is going to be in a bubble? I mean, in general, they are taking the more extreme precautions.
Yes.
Is that right or wrong? That's for each of us to decide. But there's no debate that's where they are, the NBA, on the spectrum. Texas is saying now up to 50% of fans, 50% of capacity if it's indoor. Now obviously, outdoor. Obviously, indoor is tougher, right? Because you're breathing the same air and all that stuff. And I'm not saying that it's even a good decision to have fans indoor at this point. I'm saying the idea that months and months and months from now, it's mid-June, July, August, September, October. When's the season supposed to end?
October.
It's 4 months from now. I don't know what things gonna be like 4 months from now. I see people French kissing. Well, not that, but they're giving the European hugs in the casinos now.
Strangers.
Now, is that a smart decision? I don't know. But I think what we know for sure is if you look at the world at large, you look at the NBA, the NBA is on the far end of precautions right now because it's on brand. Their brand is we care about the players. And somehow you just gobbled it up like a like a little guppy.
This
like
is the
An A they get. They care. And if they care about the fans, they must care. Or about the players, they must care about me too, the gambler.
This is the Fezzik is gullible show.
Oh, my God.
Goodness.
Well, it's the Fezzik is gullible life. Let's just say that.
Straight out of Vegas!
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Out of Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
All right, Fez. We are going to talk about the NFL, and specifically there was a redraft ESPN did. And to me, this was fascinating, this redraft. They said the whole league, it's like back at the basketball courts back in the day, the whole league is in the center hanging out, and you're a captain. There's 32 captains. Who do you take first? And they qualified it by saying, let's do 5-year horizon. So youth matters. Aaron Rodgers, for example, how good is he going to be 5 years from now? History says not very good, if even in the league. Thus, you got to downgrade him. Guy like Joe Burrow, you got to say, yeah, he might have 15 years ahead of him, but we're only counting five. I like the five because that's what a contract typically, a nice long 5-year deal. So it's like you get him for one contract. Now, what we noticed was Mahomes, Wilson, Jackson, Watson, top four. Then Aaron Donald next. And then an offensive tackle. Ronnie Staley next. And I got to thinking, boy, I love it's not just all quarterbacks. Now, first off, anyone that's taking Drew Brees number 8 on a 5-year horizon, I want to play poker with that guy.
Yeah.
So let's accept. I would be fascinated to see this kind of redraft, but with a committee of 5 people. You know, former GMs, like elite people who are debating amongst themselves. And this would be the way to do it. The first vote, when it was the number one pick, let's say, everyone gets to submit a vote privately. And if there's one guy that's got more than one, he gets it. So if it's Mahomes, 3 people, one person for Wilson, one person for Lamar Jackson, then the pick is Mahomes. If the next one, there's 2 Wilsons, 2 Jacksons, 1 someone else, it's like, okay, now we do a second vote between those 2. And then everyone gets their vote. And in the end, you would actually have not just some, let's be candid, some junior writer that's, covering Team XYZ at ESPN. That's how they start, is covering a team. Then if you're good, you keep growing. They don't really know how to draft. But you get 5 GMs, former GMs. This would be an interesting list because as much as I like that the quarterbacks are not leading the list, meaning that it's not just quarterbacks, it's actually probably wrong because the most valuable non-quarterback in the NFL is worth what?
1.5 points.
So on a game basis, if they play, give them 1.5, and if they don't, you take 1.5 away.
Exactly.
Now, how many, we know there's quarterbacks, and we'll talk about them in a second, worth a lot more than that. AutoZone has more ways for you to get what you need when you need it. With their free same-day pickup, you can place your order online and grab what you need today at more than 5,700 AutoZone locations, in-store or curbside. Visit AutoZone.com today to start your job fast. Get in the zone, AutoZone. The quarterbacks, most valuable quarterback in the NFL is who?
Mahomes. He's worth 9.5 points to the point spread.
9.5 points. And Aaron Donald's worth 1.5.
Yes.
Who's on that 1.5 list?
Only 3 guys that are non-quarterbacks. Michael Thomas, wide receiver. Christian McCaffrey, running back. And, of course, Aaron Donald.
Okay. So the question becomes, why would you take any non-quarterback if you're drafting before a quarterback until you got so far down in the draft that your quarterback was worth less than, let's say, 2 points compared to the alternative. And looking at it, there's how many quarterbacks are worth in your rankings now less than 2 points?
Only seven.
All right. And amongst those seven, most of them have really good backups. So it's more of a competition for the job.
Sure.
And there's only about three that have an average backup that are worth less points than that. Who's on that list?
Yeah, so we've got Jones, his backup's McCoy.
For the Giants.
Yeah, we got Locke for Denver, backup is Driscoll. And we've got the stash, Minshew, his backup is Glennon.
So what we're saying is, literally, what we're saying is that there's one, two, three quarterbacks that are so bad that even with an average backup, they're not worth that much. They're pretty much the average backup, just a little bit better.
Yes.
And for the other 29 teams, their quarterback is worth more compared to an average backup than the most valuable non-quarterback in the NFL.
Yes.
So, yes, I hate that the fans are like, quarterbacks matter the most. But the fans are right in this case. If you're drafting before number 20, anything but a quarterback in this kind of snake draft, you're making a mistake. A lot of mistakes on this ESPN deal.
Straight out of Vegas!
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.